This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Anthony Brooks in Washington. Neil Conan is away. The president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, was in New York last week, and during his visit, it seemed as if he owned the city as well as much of the U.S. media. Perhaps there's good reason why people here paid so much attention to him. After all, Ahmadinejad has demonstrated his radical credentials. He's rolled back freedoms at home, turned up anti-Western rhetoric abroad, denied the Holocaust, while his country pursues a potentially dangerous nuclear program. And yet, as president, his power is limited. The supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, is the ultimate decider in Iran. So to what extent does Ahmadinejad even matter? Does his rhetoric represent a threat to the U.S. and Israel? Or are Western leaders helping to inflate his own sense of importance in the way they respond to him? Later in the program, surviving a car bomb in Iraq and the urgent medical challenge of treating these injuries. But first, President Ahmadinejad, does he matter? We are joined by Azadeh Moaveni. She's the author of Lipstick Jihad and the Time magazine correspondent for Iran. She joins us from NPR's Bureau in London. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's good to have you. And we're also joined by Hirsch Goodman. He's a senior fellow at the Institute for National Security Studies at Tel Aviv University. And he joins us from his home in Jerusalem. Welcome to the show, Mr. Goodman.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. We'd also like to hear from you. Does Ahmadinejad matter to you? If so, why or why not? We would especially like to hear from Iranians in our audience. What do you think about your president? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's start with you, Azadeh Moaveni. You were in Iran until just last August. What are people in Iran saying about the president?
I think in the last year especially, Iranians have been feeling the costs of this kind of incendiary rhetoric in their daily life. They're watching inflation just skyrocket. The economy, which is already suffering, you know, doing worse than ever. And so they're sort of seeing a direct link between this kind of defiant nationalism and the undermining of their daily life. And so I think that Ahmadinejad has never been so unpopular in Tehran because he's sort of seen as the reason why everyone's lives are getting worse.
Hmm. What did you experience when you were there? I've read some of what you wrote about what it was like to live there, specifically as a woman.
Well, up until Ahmadinejad's election, you know, life was challenging in Iran as a woman, but it was bearable. There were many opportunities that women could exploit in terms of activism and organizing. But the crackdown that we've seen in the last 2 years has just been chilling. It's become difficult to write in newspapers, to be a part of women's organizations. And so there's certainly, I think, a sense that for women, they have to wait out his presidency to be able to play the kind of role they were playing before in Iranian society.
Hmm. Let's turn now to Hirsch Goodman there in Jerusalem. Israel, of course, has been the target of a lot of the president's threatening remarks. What do Israelis think about him? What do you hear there?
Well, in answer to the question whether he's relevant and whether he matters, I think he does matter. And I think we in Israel, even though we understand that he's not the final authority in the country and so on and so forth, we're not into reading the fine print. We think he's pretty indicative of a line that started with the original Ayatollah, that they perceive Israel as an agent of the West that is the West's foothold in Arabia, here to steal away their wealth and their treasures, and like a cancer, we have to be eradicated. And we take that very seriously. And the fact that he is the president of a country of over 65 million people with an annual budget of $250 million, with a massive army, and 10% of the world's oil reserves, we take him very seriously. And while people may consider him a clown, he is a PhD in engineering from a very prestigious institute in Tehran and scored very well in his SAT tests, 162 out of 400,000. So, yes, he's relevant, and we take him seriously, and it's a very worrying phenomenon.
Well, Azadeh Moaveni, let me ask you about that, because as we've mentioned, one of the premises behind this show that we want to either build up or shoot down is that perhaps we're making too much of Ahmadinejad, given how little actual power he has in Iran. Can you clarify that? How much actual power does the president of Iran have?
Well, constitutionally, the presidency is very much a symbolic institution. It's sort of like the queen would be in the United Kingdom, for example. So I think people who understand the structure of the Iranian government realize that he's not the final say in matters that count in terms of security policy, foreign policy. Those matters are decided by consensus within the regime, and there is no president, whether a moderate or a flaming fundamentalist, who can redirect the country's policy based on his own whims. So I think that we're dealing with an Iran that is at core unchanged from what it was under moderate President Khatami. And so if we're concerned with the fundamentals of the policy, I think that Iran is no more significant of a threat today than it was, say, 5 years ago.
Mm. Does that sound right to you, Hirsch Goodman?
Well, no. I think Iran is 5 years closer to being a nuclear-capable country. I think 5 years ago they did not have the ballistic missiles they have today. 5 years ago we did not have the high sensitivity that we have today, given Iraq and the explosive situation in the Persian Gulf. And we saw an almost huge mistake made by misjudgment of the regime when they captured the British sailors. It could have ended very, very differently. So I don't think we are today where we were 5 years ago. And one thing that Ahmadinejad has certainly done is highlight the Iranian nuclear program in a way that was never highlighted before. Personally, I think much to Israel's advantage.
Well, he's highlighted it, but does he have the ability to control it, for example? Let me put that question to you, Azadeh Moaveni. I mean, does he have control of Iran's nuclear program?
No, there's an institution in Iran called the Supreme National Security Council, where representatives of the armed forces, the foreign ministry, the Supreme Leader's Office, and other top regime institutions sit. This is where policy is crafted in Iran on the nuclear issue. And the president is just one member of this council. And so, no, for all of this, for all of his rhetoric and for all of his very adeptly making the nuclear issue an issue of sovereign rights and one that would sort of provoke the nationalism of Iranians, he hasn't been able as an individual to, as I said, redirect this policy, which is made at the council level.
We're talking about Iran's president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He made plenty of news last week, but does he really matter? That's what we're asking you. You can give us a call at 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255, or send us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. Let's go to Leslie, who's calling from West Bloomfield. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, cool. I've got three things I want to say, really. Number one, I think that when Khatami was, I can't say this guy's name, okay? It's a mouthful for an American.
Right.
But when Khatami was president, I remember hearing that there was a lot of clashes with the Revolutionary Council over what was Islamic, what was not Islamic, what was Iranian, what was not Iranian, sort of like a Western, anti-Western clash. And number two, and I think this, like I said, I can't say his name.
Ahmadinejad. It's okay. Just call him the Iranian president for the purposes
okay.
of this program.
Anyways, I think he's sort of like a backlash against Khatami. But number two, this guy, if I remember correctly, when he came to power, much was made of the fact that he was one of the guys who stormed the American embassy, I think back in, 79?
Okay, well, let's take a couple of those points, Leslie.
Number three, just
yeah,
one more.
Sure.
I think we sort of made him by our blunders in Iraq.
Hmm, interesting. Well, you put a lot on the table. Azadeh Moaveni, can you just talk about a little bit about his background, about what we know him? He was a very loyal to the former Supreme Leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini, correct?
He was a student activist at the time of the revolution and was a participant in the group that was involved in the hostage-taking, although he was not, by most accounts, involved in the hostage-taking itself. But what I think is important, and what most Iranians knew about him when they elected him, was only that he was mayor of Tehran. He didn't have any sort of especially important revolutionary credentials. His mandate was very clear. He promised to improve the economy, and that's what people voted him into office to do. He didn't have a foreign policy platform. So I don't see him as a backlash at all. He was sort of the lone hope of saving an economy that, despite its oil wealth, has sky-high unemployment and was really just the hope of millions of young people to create jobs and improve their daily lives.
And how is that promise going? I mean, what you suggested at the beginning of the show, that it's not going so well. I mean, he's not delivering on that.
No, it's failed rather dramatically, which is the major reason why his popularity at home has plummeted. I've been reporting in Iran for years now, and there's been no point in which I've seen so many young people desperate to leave the country. You know, it's long lines for visas. It's unprecedented, which is why I think that his presidency has been very instructive for Iranians, because it's going to make a case for them to vote another reformist into office next time around.
And those next elections come in this coming spring, is that correct?
That's right, for parliament in March of the next year.
We're talking about Iran's president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He made plenty of news last week, but we're asking, how much does he really matter? You can call in with your questions and comments at 800-989-TALK, or you can send us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. We're going to take a short break. I'm Anthony Brooks. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Anthony Brooks in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Iran's president grabbed headlines last week with his comments in New York, and the debate over whether he should have been allowed to speak at all still simmers. But in Iran, the president doesn't have much real power. He's not commander-in-chief. He's not the head of state. So does he matter? Tell us why or why not. We would especially like to hear from the Iranians in our audience. You can call us at 800-989-8255 or email us at talk@npr.org. Our guests this hour are Azadeh Moavini, Time Magazine's correspondent in Iran and author of Lipstick Jihad. Also with us is Hirsch Goodman, senior fellow at the Institute for National Security Studies at Tel Aviv University. And Hirsch Goodman, let me come back to you. I understand that you believe that Ahmadinejad does matter, but we have just heard that the Iranian president actually doesn't have very much control over foreign policy, over that nuclear program that everyone worries about. So how does he pose a real threat without that kind of power?
Look, I'm sure there are institutional differences, and I'm sure there are institutions that make these decisions. But from our perspective, given his vocal positions, both in terms of being dedicated to Israel's destruction and building the weapons that one needs to do that, we do take him seriously. And we don't know the nuances of, maybe in the Mossad and the intelligence community, they understand the subtle nuances between the different institutions within Iran. But this is the focal point. He has focused the entire nuclear issue around himself. He beats the drum on this issue. He seems to set policy vis-a-vis the Security Council. He makes the statements in the UN. He is the address that we all see responsible. He's the guy saluting the missiles as they roll by in the streets of Tehran. And he's the guy putting medals on the Revolutionary Guard for their actions in the Persian Gulf. So while, yes, there may be constitutional differences in this committee and that committee, Ahmadinejad has certainly become the focal point for everything evil and everything threatening, and makes, you know, from denying the Holocaust to denying Israel's right to exist.
Hmm.
So yes, he is relevant for.
But it seems, though, he's being in that case deliberately provocative. And I guess my question to you is, by responding, sort of taking the bait, aren't we in a way sort of pumping him up a little bit? You know, as you say, this is an effort to appeal to the Muslim world and to a certain domestic constituency. Don't we sort of pump him up by responding so seriously to what is deliberately provocative?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, that is one perspective, and should he have been allowed to speak at Columbia University and broadcast to the world is another issue. But are we pumping him up, or are we putting the spotlight on him?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are putting the spotlight on him. On the one hand, there are no homosexuals in Tehran, which is ludicrous. So everybody says the guy's a raving idiot. Then he denies the Holocaust, then everybody says, oh, you know. But actually, by following him and looking at him and listening to him, one of the first things I learned in the Israeli army is know thine enemy, you know, to take them seriously. We don't want another surprise attack here. And I take him at his word, and I take him very seriously, even though he makes statements that are ludicrous as well.
Hmm. Well, let's take a call. Babek is calling from Berkeley, California. Hi, Babek, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Well, my point is that he is the leader of the nation, so no matter what, you have to take him seriously because he's speaking for the conservative right wing of Iran. As an Iranian, I was there 3 months ago. He is not a popular president.
Hmm.
But what makes him popular is Israel and the U.S. because of their foreign policy and their policy towards the Palestinians and the vicious treatment of the Palestinians and the lie that we went to war for in Iraq. That's what's making him popular, because people support him. Because when I was in Dubai or when I went to Mexico, people support him because they disagree with the U.S. or people support him because they disagree with the treatment of the Palestinians. That's what's making him popular.
All right, Babek. Well, thanks for the call. Moavani, let me put a couple of points that Babek just made to you. What about U.S. foreign policy, based on the reporting you have done in Iran? Is there a lesson for Americans, maybe even American policymakers, about Iran here?
Absolutely. I think that's the real central issue that we have to look at head on when dealing with Ahmadinejad, is precisely what Babak just mentioned, which is his popularity, you know, both at some point in Iran when he was popular and around the world, in the Islamic world especially, is simply symptomatic of people's resentment internationally at American policies in the Middle East. When I've had the same experience traveling in, you know, in other Arab capitals, you get into a taxi and someone finds out you're Iranian, they immediately want to, you know, rave about how much they love Ahmadinejad. And it's precisely because he provides an outlet for all of this resentment at Iraq falling apart and at support at what is considered blind support for Israel. And so really, what we, if we want to understand the phenomenon, it's a symptom rather than a phenomenon in its own right.
Mm, but does it suggest particular policy prescriptions in this country?
When it comes to Iran and especially when it comes to Israel, I think it's clear that there's a sense in the Arab world and the Middle East and wider than that, that there needs to be a more nuanced policy and a real effort made to get the peace negotiations back on track. But I think something that could make a real difference, that it would actually be feasible perhaps, is a difference in terms of rhetoric and style by this Bush administration, which is, you know, to drop this rhetoric of regime change and bullying as it's perceived in Iran, and to sort of sit down at the negotiating table and sort of pick up dialogue in areas where there are shared interests, for example, in Iraq, rather than just sort of finger wagging and sort of feeding the flames of the rhetoric on the other side.
Hmm. Well, going beyond rhetoric, Hirsch Goodman, I gather there's all kinds of concern in Israel for specific reasons. You've mentioned some. Among them, Iran does arm Hezbollah, for example.
Yes, it does, and it supports international terror, and it's trying to penetrate Gaza and radicalize Gaza. And essentially, I think what Ahmadinejad has done with his rhetoric, there's a new sort of order in the Middle East. There's a new division. There's Iran, Hezbollah, Syria, Hamas, and then there's the Saudis, the Turks, the Gulfies, the Gulf states, who feel threatened by the potential of a nuclear Iran. And there's a very clear division, and I'm not going to say axis of evil, axis of good, but there's a clear division between Iranian-type thinking today, anti-Western, anti-Israeli, and those who want to consolidate in a pro-Western mold. So what there is a new division, and it's something that has not existed here before.
Hmm. Let's take another call. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 989-TALK. Let's go to Sam, who's calling from San Francisco. Hi, Sam.
Good morning.
You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, I also want to essentially chime in and acknowledge Babak and also Azadeh. From my own personal experience, I recently visited the Gulf region of Dubai, also visited Egypt, and it was then I sort of became evident that Ahmadinejad's rhetorics are only for regional consumption, and it's there to extend Iran's influence within the populist people there. I mean, the moment they found out I was of Iranian descent, they hugged me, they kissed me, they gave me thumbs up to Ahmadinejad, they said thumbs up Ahmadinejad, Bush thumbs down. And this is all essentially fueled by, again, I think the U.S. policy recently in Iraq, because they viewed it as an invasion, and also the blind support of Israel, which they feel is unjust. And Iran is the only regional power within the Arab world who's now essentially standing in front of the U.S., at least symbolically from Ahmadinejad's rhetoric. I mean, I grew up in Iran. I know the government is very shrewd and very pragmatic. So they're not out there to just confront U.S., and they're only using Ahmadinejad essentially as a puppet, essentially, to gain regional influence, and it's really paying off. I mean, most of us who live abroad, we despise this guy because we think he's an idiot. And I was one of them until I visited these regions recently, and I realized all this stuff is really designed for regional consumption to extend Iranians' influence by winning the hearts and minds of the regional power. I mean, Bush talks about winning the regional power and winning the hearts and minds of the region and the Muslim world, but they haven't done that. In fact, they've done essentially the opposite of that. Versus Ahmadinejad, through his wars and standing against Israel, has essentially won the hearts and minds of
Okay, people. Sam, yeah, we get the point loud and clear, and I thank you for calling. Let me throw that point over to Azadeh Moaveneh. What do you hear in Sam's comment? Does that sound accurate to you?
What resonates with me certainly is what I've seen is a very conscious strategic shift within the Iranian government in the last 2 years. In 2003, I believe, and this is documented in a new book that's called Treacherous Alliance, I believe, is that Iran made an offer to the United States privately to end support for militant groups like Hezbollah and Hamas and other exchanges of more favorable behavior in exchange for an end to sanctions. It was basically an offer to sit down at the table. It was a signal that Iran was willing to put aside all of this unhelpful behavior, the support for these terrorist groups, in exchange for promises of an end to sanctions and other sorts of incentives on the other side. This offer was completely ignored by the American government. And so I think that there was a conclusion made in Tehran, which is that the U.S. simply does not want to deal with the Islamic Republic. And so we need to shore up our position in the region and in the world through other means. And one of them has been to create all this popularity and support in the Arab and Islamic world for this kind of rhetoric. And so I think it's sort of a last resort kind of policy shift made in Tehran, sort of based on the conclusion that direct dialogue with the U.S. government at this point is not an option that's attractive in Washington.
800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. That's the number to call. We're talking about President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and whether or not he matters or how much he matters. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take a call. Let's go to Phil, who's calling from Little Rock, Arkansas. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Another country that we see with an increasingly anti-U.S. bent is Venezuela, and specifically, of course, it comes from Chavez. And he and President Ahmadinejad seem to really admire each other and their ideals, and that worries me. And I wonder how influential can Ahmadinejad be in, you know, allying Iran with Venezuela in some aspects?
Venezuela or perhaps other countries. Do you want to take a stab at that, Hirsch Goodman?
Well, I think, yes, it's a very interesting example that's been brought to light. And I think what they have in common between them is oil, which gives them some leverage. It's also an anti-Bush, anti-American rhetoric. I think what has really played into Ahmadinejad's hands is the war in Iraq and what's happened as a result of the war in Iraq. And I think that's really flamed sectarian feelings and has made him popular as an anti-American figure. Frankly, I think Israel and the Palestinians, okay, maybe I'm saying this as an Israeli, is a bit of a sideshow. But I absolutely agree with all the callers until now that what has made Ahmadinejad, instead of a clown, instead of an embarrassment, instead of an oddity, a mainstream speaker, is that he symbolizes what people feel about America's policies in the Middle East at this particular time, mm-hmm. and Israel's for that matter.
Well, let's try and get another call in here. Rauja is calling from Princeton, New Jersey. Am I pronouncing that name correctly? Rauja.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi.
You're on the air.
My question is for Azadeh, and that is how do you see the future election, presidential election in Iran? Do you think Ahmadinejad will get elected again? And also, we know that Iran's position on Israel was not did not change over the course of 20 or so years. So why this time is different? Iran never acknowledged the existence of Israel as an independent state.
Okay, well, let's take that first question first,
sure.
Azadeh, to you. Will he be elected again in the spring?
Well, in the spring we're going to have parliamentary elections, so that'll be an early test to see whether his political allies have a future on the domestic political scene. And I would be inclined to think not so at all. In the last elections that we had for the city municipal councils, his allies lost. The reformists were voted back in. And I would expect the same both in the parliamentary elections and the next presidential election, because I think that he has inadvertently made a very strong case that the country was in better hands when the president was a reformist and a moderate, and that things would be better off altogether if the moderates and reformists were back in charge, at least of the presidency.
Azadeh, I have a sort of a question that gets back to sort of the basic relationships within the Iranian government. To what extent is he a pawn of the country's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, or does he represent a separate, even more conservative force that is rising in Iran?
From the insiders that I've talked to and officials that I've talked to, it seems very much that the supreme leader supports his style of rhetoric, that he supports his crackdowns domestically. I think this gets at sort of a delicate political point that goes into these sort of Byzantine factional politics inside Iran, which I think might be sort of a bit too intricate for the purposes of a general audience. But I think what's important to note is that Ahmadinejad makes the supreme leader stronger domestically vis-a-vis his own political opponents. So there's kind of this internal Byzantine politicking going on, too, in terms of that relationship. So I think that it needs to be read with a bit of nuance.
Hmm. Hirsch Goodman, we literally have sort of 10 seconds left in the show. I wanted to give you an opportunity to make a final comment about this. Any sort of final thoughts about this?
Well, just in answer to the original question, does he matter? Is he relevant? I'd say the answer is very much yes.
Well,
I think we should listen to what he says.
Well, I think based on what you say, I think on the interesting comments from Azadeh Moavaneh and some great callers, I think I would tend to agree that he does matter. Thank you both very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
That's Hirsch Goodman. He's a senior fellow at the Institute for National Security Studies at Tel Aviv University. And Azadeh Moavaneh, author of Lipstick Jihad. She was Time magazine correspondent for Iran. Coming up, the story of one reporter who was critically injured in Iraq and how she hopes to support the doctors who saved her life. The opinion page is next. I'm Anthony Brooks. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.